All right. Here we go. All right. Okay. Do your thing.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is yet another amazing week of podcasting. Listen, episode 17 of Get Realisms. I am Adam Chase Rennie.
And I am Christine Chen.
17 weeks. 17 weeks doing this, and Christine, my other half, is here.
We're going strong, considering that I'm on set, and I'm doing this on my day off.
You're doing it on your day off, and Christine is in the middle of a fucking hurricane.
it's been
almost
insane. Yes. So, okay, a lot of firsts for me. Yesterday, we had four tornado watch warnings during our film set.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've never dealt with that before.
Yeah.
We also had two hurricanes that were going towards our set as well. Hurricane Marco, and Laura. And you don't know what you're supposed to do. Until
you have no idea.
Yeah. Until that happens. And so, like, my responsibility is to keep the crew safe. And I'm like,
I mean, did it, if it's a category 4, I'd assume
right, we would have cut it. But like,
yeah.
So the first one, part of the dynamic is that, so my, set wife, Carly, she's the second AD.
Second AD.
Yeah. So she's in the office a lot. And so, cause that's her job. And so she is kind of like turned into Mrs. Weather Girl. So she's there basically always monitoring everything.
And meteorologist.
Our job is to, like, in a calm matter, tell people, hey, like, don't panic.
Mm-hmm.
These are the details that we have, and you guys will be safe. These are the safe points on the property, blah, 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 blah. Make a whole, like, plan type thing. And it's this fine dance between giving people information and withholding your information to not create utter panic. And it's been very difficult because I come from a place where communication is extremely important. And bye. And it's hard because I deal with things by, like, over communicating. I feel like over communication allows for people to not make their own assumptions about things. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No,
and
I agree.
In my opinion, I'd rather give more information than too much information. But I'm definitely working with people who, I get it. I understand their perspective too. They are coming from a place where they're saying too much information causes panic, which I can also see perspective wise. So it's been this, like, push and pull dynamic of, like, we want to send out a hurricane plan, and then this, like, no, we are not doing that because I'll panic, make people panic. Let's send this information out. No, don't announce that because I'll make people panic. And it's like,
yeah, you're in uncharted waters. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
highly stressful.
Yeah.
And I pride myself as a very emotional person. And it's,
well, very, yeah, but you're, yes, also professional too.
Yes.
Like, you, so you're,
it's a balance, and it's very, yeah, difficult. I was talking to a friend yesterday being like, it's crazy that I'm in this position that is all about logic and just logic,
yes,
and reasoning, right?
Strategy. Yeah. Yeah.
Yet that emotion is very much there,
mm-hmm,
but I have to hide it essentially because, however,
for the good of the team, for the good of the crew. Exactly.
However I feel is going to somehow rub off and affect how everybody else feels. But that's got to go somewhere, you know? It manifests itself in...
Oh, so you unfortunately channel it to your wife?
No, I channel it to some heavy drinking. Just kidding.
Heavy drinking. Booze.
Booze. No, just, you know, working out helps. And
yeah.
Writing, talking about it, and whatnot.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you're talking about it because it, yeah, that is interesting because I wouldn't know what to do in a situation like that because to cause even bigger panic won't help the situation either.
Right.
Because you're just now giving all of the information and you're having no regard for context, authenticity, you know, whatever it is. And sometimes, you know, it's a kind of like the news is almost like a game of telephone.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like things are just gonna be fucked up by the time it gets to you.
Right. Yeah. You know, and we're getting it on all ends too. And
yeah.
So, I mean, Carly woke up to her parents like texting her 10 times being like, hey, like, are you okay? And that stuff gets to you now, you know, like maybe you were, but then like now you're not because your parents are worried. So maybe you should be worried too, you know? So it's like, it's
yeah. Yeah.
It's a very interesting dynamic, this balance between.
Well, it's a unprecedented situation, what yeah, you're kind of going
through. I can't imagine.
Through.
I mean, like, we're, like, trying to make these, like, decisions whether to give information or not give information. I'm like, man, I'm so glad I'm not the president.
Yeah, that's the worst job in the world, right? Because yeah, whatever like, decision man. You make, half of the people are going to fucking hate you.
Yes. And that's the same. This is a microcosm of that. No matter what decision I make, there are going to be people who are mad.
Like, yeah. No matter what.
There are going to be people who complain. And you just can't make everybody.
And unfortunately, mad. We are surrounded by a bunch of complainers.
It's just people are particular. It's not, I guess, I mean, I complain about certain things, I'm sure.
I do too. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're yeah. all different. And, we all have our things that we like or need to feel comfortable. So it's not terribly fair to be like, oh, like so, there are people who are more particular than the others for sure. But, man, it's crazy. Like I was just saying on the set, I was telling the director yesterday, like I have worked with many directors, but, he mentioned that the two entry positions on a film set are PA and director. And it's so true.
Really?
Because anybody can jump in and be a director.
Yeah.
You just need to pay people who know more stuff than they do, you know? And I, as an AD, actually it's more common to work with people who don't know what they're doing. That's why they hire you as an AD, really, to you know, walk them through stuff. But like, this director like really knows his shit. He's very good.
I think that's the fundamental difference, right? It's how you are respected and regarded as a filmmaker and as a director in particular when you walk onto a film set. Because if you don't know anything, it's kind of hard to communicate, right? It's sure. kind of hard to articulate what you need in that particular scene because sometimes
right.
people exactly. cannot. Explain what the fuck they need in front of
yeah,
them.
Yeah, what they need, what they want. Yeah,
and then so that turns into frustration, and then it challenges their ego, and then they start to go after the first AD.
Right.
You know, totally. And yeah, they yeah, or whoever's closest to them. You know what I mean? Like they sure. just and they is, just blame everybody.
I'm having the opposite problem. I'm having the director knows. So much because he used to be an AD and also a script supervisor, like two of the like most like you had to really know your shit to know. And I'm on my toes all the time trying to keep up with or try to keep pace with him or at least a few steps before him, you know. And it's hard, man. Half the time I go back from a set and being like, shit, like what could I have done better, you know?
But do you really beat yourself up over that?
Yeah. Cause I feel like if I take any job, I'm going to do the best that I can.
Yeah.
And
that's all you got to remember. Yeah. Well, yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying. Like if you're learning those lessons along the
right.
way,
right.
You can, yeah, I understand in that sense for sure. But I don't know, man. I feel like
it's just,
I'm saying like put you in a very professional set.
Sure.
Like a super professional set. You're not going to sink. You know what you're doing.
No, I do know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
No, it's very...
But, yeah, it's challenging. Yeah.
It's challenging because it's like I'm with a caliber, with people of a lot of high professional caliber. Therefore, like, it's testing me to do the best and be better at what I do. And that's not bad whatsoever. You know, that's how you grow.
Not at all.
It just is a frustrating journey and process, you know, because as a competitive person, mm-hmm. you unfortunately grew up being like, oh, like you are what you are and what you do is who you are. And like, that's how I got validation. Like,
yeah,
being very good at most of the things that I do, that like, if I'm not excelling at 110%, like I feel like shit, you know?
Yeah. And I get that too. I feel that way most of the time, especially around people who are in the field, and I fucking failed at the very thing I was hired to do.
Yeah.
That is the worst fucking feeling. And I've definitely gotten checked many times for acting like, you know, I know what I'm doing. I'm fine. You know, I don't need to, you know, I'm asking for help. Why? Because, you know, when it's not, it's never a sign of weakness when you ask for help. That's really, you know, I don't know. It's sad. You don't, you ask for help because you want to do the best that you possibly can. And if anything, you're empowering them if you ask for help. You know, and
like it's ED, man. It's,
I know, dude. That's why I'm like, you being the first AD, that's if anybody in the United States of fucking America, you need a first AD who will kick ass and take names. Fucking hire Christine Chen.
This is hard. It's like, it's people are always looking to you for answers, and sometimes you're getting things.
I know, and that's
like, I don't know. Yeah, you know.
So how, that's my question to you, and I've always wanted to ask you that, and I keep forgetting to. How do you deal with that onslaught of, because regardless, whatever set you work on, even if people are aware of what they're asking, and sometimes a department needs a question that needs to be addressed.
Right.
How do you deal with that onslaught at a constant rate?
Sure. I mean, it's a lot of like, just prior, it's triaging. You're always triaging stuff, and you're trying to figure out like what's priority right now that will affect the set moving forward. What's stuff that, and it's a lot of following up, and a lot of times it's just making sure that different departments communicate with each other, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm not going to have all the answers, and it's being okay with that and understanding that I just need, most of the times people just want to know the answers at a certain, like later, and I need to figure out how to get those answers. And as long as I can get those answers, then it's okay.
We got to figure out what's going on right now. Yeah. And then we can worry about.
Right. But I think the
2 hours from now
is maintaining that cool and collectiveness.
Yeah.
At all times when you're getting bombarded with questions that are also anxiety causing, you know, to your own self, you know, but you have to act like, oh, it's no big deal. It's totally cool. Like, yeah, 2 hurricanes are coming. No problem, guys. Like, I'm going to do it. Yeah, it's fine. Like, this is our hurricane plan. I'm like, what the fuck? You know, this is our this is the highest ground. Like, these are things that I didn't know either, but I had to go figure it out. But be in a position to be like, hey, like, I am calm and collected, and this is the information. And then it's that like whole balance of giving just enough where people feel good, and then like not endangering people. And it's just,
yeah. And then you're right. It's a never ending battle. I mean, like even Socrates couldn't even figure this shit out, Christine.
it's funny. It's just like,
you know what I mean? No one figures this out. No one. And it's all about timing, right? And it's about reading the room.
Read people so
much. You have to just understand like, oh, should I say this? Is this appropriate for me at this moment?
And I'm not perfect. And so like,
I'm not either.
Here's a prime example.
Sure.
We had some tornado warnings, a tornado warning, which I've learned. I didn't know this, is that a tornado is, there's a tornado watch and a tornado warning. Tornado watch means that you're just to be on the lookout for tornadoes. Tornado warning means that somewhere within a certain vicinity, a tornado has touched down. So that there is a tornado.
Within your proximity.
Right.
Okay.
Well, then, like, there's news stuff that's like, oh, in Hammond, Louisiana, 13 miles away, like, a Dollar General got ripped apart. And it's like,
Jesus,
I'm getting that, right? And people are reading that. And it seems like, to me, very relevant information to tell people.
Right.
So I made the mistake of being like, hey, guys, like, 13 miles, like, just to give information, like, 13 miles away, there's
yeah.
But producers both like jumped on my like ass basically and like ripped me a piece because they're like, dude, like that's information that could cause like panic.
Well, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm like, there's things I agree and there's things I don't agree, but yeah. Because I mean, I do believe that news is there for a reason, and anybody can access this, right?
Sure, exactly. So I was just like, I just told people, like, hey, like, this is what I've heard, blah, 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 and like, got literally ripped to shreds. Like, director was mad. Both producers talked to me, and it was like, I feel like shit. Like after that, I was like, man,
that feels Yeah, I don't know.
Felt terrible. I was like. I thought it was important information. You know?
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know, Christine. Like, I'm on your side because I'm. Balance.
It's always like that.
I'm Well, no, it's not about balance. It's just it's about reporting what is there. It's already there, right. And you're not jeopardizing the safety of the set by providing news. However, if people don't know geography. If they don't know what the fuck is around them and they hear that, oh yeah, there's a tornado that landed, you know, 13 right. miles outside of the city.
Problem.
Then everybody's like, wait, what? What? Tornado?
Right,
what?
Right. And that's the issue that they were having is that we have people who aren't from there.
But Christine, that's ignorance.
Right.
At that point, that's ignorance. That to me is you're giving the consent that you disregard the news, that you don't care. And you're going to follow the news on your own time because it's there. It's, you know, you can't make it up. You know, a tornado has landed and it's been reported.
Yeah.
It just seems a little silly, but I also understand the cause and effect of hysteria. I do understand that.
Yes. I mean, we just went through it where everybody bought all the toilet paper. So
yeah that's true. Yeah. That's true. Hey, and that's the other thing. I bought into that hysteria. I literally went to like 7 different HEBs trying to find toilet paper, and I found like one single roll.
Yeah.
You know, that was like wrapped, like, you know, like when you go to the hotels and they sometimes they'll sell like the individual like toilet paper. We got that. I got that. You know, that if that feels like sandpaper on your ass. Yeah. Got that. You know, so I don't know, man. I'm on your side on this with the entire thing, but
it's very it can go both ways.
But it could go both ways.
Yeah, totally.
It can go both ways
from the perspective of the producers, and I also see like, hey, I was just giving me information, but like,
yeah,
I just feel like that's half the time on my job is like this balance, the balance of like giving enough information, not giving enough information, being completely emotionless but still understand like people's emotions. It's like,
and that's so hard.
I just feel like it's this all the time, like
you're just clashing at yourself,
and, like, it's all in my head, and I'm just like trying to smile the whole time. I mean, like, everything's great, it's fine.
I love that meme where it's like the dog sipping tea and everything's fine. On fire, it's fine.
That's like the theme of AD, really. It's fine. Mm-hmm. It's fine,
it's fine, we're fine. Yeah. everything's fine
exactly.
Yeah. But that's kind of like the beauty of being the first AD, right? You get the shit end of the stick, but yet when shit is going great, you are the rock star.
So,
but regardless, I still love you, Christine.
Oh, well, thank you. So yes, there's my hurricane tornado COVID experience.
Is it still crazy outside?
We're still shooting. Well, today, we got lucky. So
yeah.
Marco became a tropical depression, and then for us, Laura moved towards Houston. So
okay,
we got
right.
to Egypt yeah. instead, and you know, we've been okay. Luckily, so we've been able to shoot. We're shooting in these storage containers, and it's like so hot in there. So that's why when you texted me, I was actually sleeping because we've been doing night shoots.
Really?
Because it is so hot in the containers that like the difference between shooting at 5 p.m. versus shooting at like 2 p.m. is significant. Yeah. It's the ventilation and everything in there is just terrible.
And you guys are not getting air conditioning.
I mean, there is there's air blowing in and some fans, and it's like hot as hell. So we've been working. Our schedule has been
circulating hot air.
Pretty much, that's what it is. Our film schedule has been between 3 to 5 p.m. basically around there. I always have to, as the AD team, we always have to come about an hour earlier than everybody else. And
production always does.
Production's always 1 hour earlier. Mm-hmm. And always last to end, too.
Always the last one to leave.
Coach Beach Film Festival. Dude, I've wanted to submit to your festival forever. So.
Hi, Newport Beach Film Fest.
Yeah, hopefully one of these days I will actually get my film into your festival.
At the rate you're pumping these fucking movies, Christine, and short films, I mean, it seems like it's impossible to not to.
I don't know. It's programming is a whole beast, though. Like, it all has to kind of like fit together, you know. So they take so much time with how it flows as a whole program, and so it may not be your film. It could be very much that like subject matter wise, like it just doesn't fit within what they're looking to focus on in that program. So it's so extremely subjective, and I'm very aware of that. But yeah, filmmaker problems always have so much rejection. Hey, but at least, I feel like our rejection is not nearly as bad as like actors and stuff. Like, man.
Oh no, not in even the slight. Like, for me to pursue, like I my hats are off to actors. Like, acting is. That's a beast in of itself. And for those of you who are acting still in the middle of Corona, like doing voice work and stuff like that.
Yeah.
God bless you. Keep doing what you're doing.
Hi, how are you guys doing? Good. We're surviving.
We're good.
We've been past, none of us have been hit by the hurricane. We were just talking about how you deal with hurricanes or hurricane warnings or tornado warnings on a film set. I do first AD work. And
mass hysteria.
So we're trying, how do you give information without creating mass hysteria when internally you're experiencing your own mass hysteria?
Jesus Christ, yeah.
It's funny. But so I'm here till September 3rd, just working. Very lucky. And then after that, I'm tagged to do something else already, man.
Are you really?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
I can't say.
Where are you going?
Yet. I think I'll be in Louisiana.
Oh, okay, cool. So you are where you are.
Yeah, I'm also prepping, not here, but like somewhere else in Louisiana. I'm also going to hopefully be prepping for a very big film.
Big film.
A big one. Like in the 15 million type range. Yeah.
Get the fuck out of my face. Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so exciting.
But
wow.
I'm not going to. I'm going to put all my eggs in a basket. And
much respect. Yes. Yeah, so. We can't talk about it, but I am very happy for you, Christine.
Yeah.
Very excited for you.
Cash says that he is watching Christopher Nolan movies. That's perfect because I love Christopher Nolan. That's one of my favorite directors.
Love. Yeah, by the way, are you are we gonna see Tenet or what?
Is right. What's up with that? I mean, they crashed a plane, a real one.
Yeah, dude.
I would man, that would be okay. I have some really cool news.
Sure.
Because of the crash of the plane, it totally like, reminded me. So I have a short that I made on my off day, and we played it right before John Schneider's stuff, basically. And he liked it so much that he told me I could burn down an RV.
Are you fucking shitting me?
It's for the so the film has that little plot in there. And we kind of like cheated it like majorly. And you technically don't need to see it. But he totally gave us permission. I'm hoping that if it doesn't like completely just rain the entire day that I can do it today. So we'll see. Is that badass? Talk about
that is so cool.
In a building, I get to burn down an RV.
You get to burn a vehicle. You get to cause anarchy in a anarchy. in a tight kind of space.
My little pyro because here in
the yeah, y'all are burning shit.
It's great, and I love it. It's very therapeutic.
I bet. Yeah, I bet just blowing shit up. Yeah,
I'm like a big redneck right now because like. One of my favorite things that gives me lots of joy on this set is when I'm like stressed the F out, I can look forward to it at our lunch period. My second AD and I will hijack one of the Kubotas that's being used to like drive talent around and equipment.
Is that like a golf cart?
It's like a
Kubota
four-wheeler golf cart. Yeah. But like
okay.
All terrain. You know, type thing.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Okay.
And just hijack that thing and just ride fuck around the property for the remaining 10 minutes that we have on break.
Wow, really?
And that just...
just that ripping little, shit.
Yeah, and that little piece just makes it like...
Oh, okay. All the worthwhile. Yeah, dude. Absolutely. All the worthwhile. You could just... we got a question from Instagram.
Oh, yeah. How a new Sony A7S III costs. You know what? I typically, my experience is that it's, because I remember the A7S, because I have an A7S I.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten the III yet. And for me, I bought it for around $1,800. So I'm assuming it's going to be around that range.
Yeah, that sounds
like
about right.
$1,800 to like $2,000 something. I look it up real quick. How much A7S III costs. I didn't even know they had it. I've worked with the A7S 2, but I don't know they came out with a 3 already. Oh, okay. Well, it's about $3,500. Yeah. $3,500 in the States is how much.
Yeah.
So, yep.
That's probably right.
I can't keep track of all the different cameras and stuff. I don't shoot nearly as much as I used to. So it's like, I have the gear that can do enough, and if I need to borrow anything, I usually just rent it now. So
it seems like every year there's a new generation for cameras and even software too, like editing software.
It shoots 4K 120 10 bit. That's awesome. That's cool.
Wow.
Yeah, big deal. That's cool. Well, that's neat. No wonder it's cost that much money.
Yeah, makes sense. 35. Yeah, dude. Are you, so you're still shooting. Are you resuming shooting tomorrow, like as scheduled? Okay.
Yes, as scheduled. Call time is, let's see what call time is.
Yeah.
I think they were discussing whether call time would be 5 p.m., but I think they came up with a happy medium, and it's going to be 4 p.m. call time tomorrow. So, I believe. Don't quote me on that. Until I get
the call. Trust me, I will. Don't you worry. All the way here in Austin, I'm going to fucking be there 4 p.m. Be like Christine.
I honestly like these call times besides my sleep pattern being terrible because I get to like work out in the mornings and then like kind of like do my emails.
I think I learned that the hard way. Knowing anyone going into the film industry just has to understand your sleep schedule when you're on a shoot is just, it's out the window. And just understand it's going to be out the window.
Yeah. Yeah. Completely out the window. Hello, hello. I got a bunch of phone calls at like normal people time, like 9. You know?
Yeah, and you're...
I'm like, I literally just watched the sunrise at 6 a.m.
Like, yeah, you were out with the crackheads. Yeah.
Well, I finished up at the production office, walked out, and I was like, oh, I haven't done this in a while. Like, see the sunrise.
Yeah. It's like you just went into like a drinking binge, but you didn't. It's work. Yeah.
Yeah. You just came out and went to sleep.
It's like you came out of a cave. Up. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, dude. That's I mean, we've done already a little over 30 minutes. It's up to you if you want to wrap shit up or.
I think I can go for a little bit longer. I'm trying to. Yes, I'm gonna run some errands and stuff in a few, but like I can see.
Have you been writing
questions? Oh, me. I have something in my head. Yes, that I'm totally.
That you just haven't jotted down yet. That's crazy. You can keep an idea in your head.
Okay, so I had written a proof of concept short of this idea that reincarnating itself due to the property inspiration and due to multiple factors. So,
so you're bringing it back to life.
Yes. So I on the DL, I officially kind of have a management company type, not like somebody's managing me now, which is really cool.
Nice.
They asked whether I
Christine had going rolling with the big leagues.
Nah, that's all. I don't want to.
You're good.
Cool. Yeah. So like,
it is cool. It is cool.
And they asked,
I'm happy for you.
I would consider like writing or doing something in the thriller horror genre. And
I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt you, Christine, but this guy has a good point who talked to you about the Sony camera. He said, I feel like these mirrorless DSLRs are going to take over big cinema cameras in the near future. I believe that too, kind of.
They're just like, so convenient. And because of their convenience, it makes you do things and test things and try different techniques that you otherwise wouldn't have done, you know? So like, I would take my Sony A7S to travel with me, and like because the cost factor isn't like $30,000, it's $3,000, I'm more willing to like, let's put this camera on the ground, let's stick the camera in the refrigerator, let's stick the camera, like, so then I get to like try different things, you know, versus like a $50,000, $100,000 camera. I'm just like,
yeah, like a Red or a Alexa, you know.
Deal with that. Yeah.
Can I stick the Alexa in the freezer?
Which we did. We totally did.
Have you? Have we?
Yeah, six words. Not in the freezer, in the refrigerator. We put it in the refrigerator.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's, I mean, for a short period of time.
Yeah, but that was like a quick turnaround too. That was like not even like
totally
a.
We did stick the
Alexa mini
into the refrigerator.
Y'all, a bunch of rule breakers. Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, dude. Yeah. But we were talking about your idea. So you haven't written it down yet.
I wrote a while ago.
Well, you got the proof of concept. Yeah.
Short. Yes. I had a very rough proof of concept short that I wrote that I might.
Not en route.
No, that's completely different. But I might be reincarnating it and developing it into a feature because they're wanting to see if I might want to do something like horror thriller related.
So, yeah. I love that. Yeah. You know, I love that. If I'm not part of that project.
Yes.
You can get another art department.
You're always part of my project. If you can like make it there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to, mention
the entry level, the Komodo. Yeah, totally. Do you know how much that like costs? Let me look. I personally haven't heard anybody that has worked with the Komodo yet, but I'm sure. Oh shit! It's still
pretty expensive.
It's expensive, but it's definitely not like Red Dragon expensive. It's the Super 35 6K man. I don't even know how to. I can't even handle 4K sometimes. Huh?
That's ridiculous. What? 6K.
Well, I mean, like, 8K is going to be, like, the next thing. How much is it? I just want to know how much it is. Thank you. Thank you for the support. Yeah, thanks for the... We'll see. I'm not precious when it comes to scripts because, like, there's always going to be ideas that ebb and flow, and And it's a lot of times it's about timing and like what you feel at that point, you know. Oh wow, it's only $6,000. That's really reasonable.
That's really reasonable.
Yeah,
for the Komodo. Band.
Yeah, the Komodo. Yeah, the Reds Komodo for a 6K. That's nice. Pretty great. Wow, I'll have to start looking and seeing what their specs look like in test footage and stuff. That's cool.
I've been going through the same problem with writing my script. It feels like every single time, like a new scene that I'm writing, that just a brand new idea pops up the next day.
Yeah.
And it's hard for me to be attached to something unless like it's a really good idea. Like the plot that I'm writing in this draft is the plot that I want. It's the plot that I'm really, really happy about. Good. But it's the execution of it all and also ending it. Like I'm still in the middle of the third act.
Mm-hmm.
And
third act is so hard.
Well, the second act was even harder for me. Like the second act, I was in limbo for a solid month and a half, 2 months, because it's painful. It's really painful.
How do you get through your writer's like block and stuff like that?
So I don't know if you can see that. But I just started doing the index cards, like on that.
Worked out a lot for me. Just to write it down.
Yeah, but it's the David Lynch way of index cards, not the Aaron Sorkin. It's a 40 index card, so it's 10 for Act 1, 20 for Act 2, and 10 for Act 3.
Oh.
And you break it all down, and those are 40 scenes that you have. That's your entire movie. So you can add or subtract if you want, but that's how David Lynch writes all of his movies is by, well, not all of it, but most of it.
That's cool. I've never done that methodology.
And it's interesting.
I've done my own note card system.
Yeah.
For me, but like, I haven't done like an actual, what's the Sorkin method?
The Sorkin method is essentially, it's sort of like 40 index cards, but instead how he did it for like the West Wing, that's how he sort of presented it, mm-hmm. was he would have an index card for specific characters. So he would have it for a specific scene and for a specific character. It's like, okay, I want the president and the vice president in the Oval Office, and at the same time, I want the Secretary of State and the Treasury in the office.
Did the Sorkin method without thinking about it.
And everyone does. I have too.
That's what I did for En Route.
It's about timing and where the timing is placed in that chronological order.
I did for En Route, I did individual cards for characters, but it was to help me build backstory for those characters that may or may not appear or make, like, that information never really makes it into the movie, but like subtly it does, because it affects backstory. You don't have to talk about it, but you know that it affects the character itself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So like it was all the way from like where they were born, which high school they went to, when did they meet each other, when did they get married, when did they get divorced, when did they date, like.
And nobody takes that to consideration, especially other writers who I talk to. They always talk about plot. They never talk about the characters.
Yeah.
They never talk about the life that breathes the script and the story itself, which are the characters.
Sure, but I think there's room for both processes. Like, I think initially I definitely started off more plot-wise, you know, getting those, like, points from first act, second act, third act, whatever.
Yeah.
But then to really dive into the characters themselves, that's when I did the individual cards and really built the backstory that, because it affects, like, people's conversations with each other, things that we do that we don't say, or, like, how people react. I don't know. I'm really glad I did that.
Well, no, yeah. And Aaron Sorkin put it in a way that he was like, I build my characters that had already pre-existing conditions to have a place in the story at that specific moment, at that specific time.
Yeah.
Because a young kid wouldn't understand the information being received by the whoever is opposite, you know. Everything just has to make sense. Everything has to be linear. and that's Aaron Sorkin. It feels like things are just so moving so fast, you can't really keep up. That's just how dialogue is, and that's how things are, and that's just how life is.
Yeah.
Because, like, we don't have a conversation where we wait for a beat and then cut to another person in a conversation. That's not how it works. Especially, like, if you ever watch The Newsroom, it's interesting because Aaron Sorkin breaks it all down to what the news currently is. So, like, the first episode was about the Event Horizon oil rig blew up in the Gulf of Mexico. The Gulf of Mexico. And that giant oil spill that fucked the entire Gulf of Mexico up, Aaron Sorkin wrote the entire pilot just around that, but with supporting characters who actually got affected by these news.
Yeah.
In a way that makes sense in the story. Mm-hmm. But it all is a process, and it all has to fit in this weird world that you created.
Yeah. I just think that it's totally interconnected because the stories that just rely on plot, I think, miss the mark when it comes to being able to connect with characters because they don't do their, it's just more purely like,
yes,
this is what happens and this is what happens and this is what happens versus like, why do they all kind of like affect the people who are in it? And ultimately, like, doing the writing process, that's the biggest thing I've learned is like, if I don't take the time to really understand my characters and develop that, then I don't get the emotional impact that it could have, you know, because understanding your characters drives the decisions that they make. And ultimately, I think that's the part that's interesting in a story. It's less about the action itself, but more about like, what are the decisions that these characters make? Because that is essentially what makes them human, and that's what we're connected to as humans. The human aspect of decision-making and emotions and whatnot. So,
and the consequences of those decisions.
Yes, the consequences of those emotions. That is exactly correct. That's what my friend keeps telling me, like, hey, like you have to make that a big priority in your script, or like people cannot connect to it as well as they could.
That's my theme in my script is consequences. It's about meeting the demon of consequences and every decision that you make. And you think you're so right about a specific decision that you made, well, think again, because you have to suffer with the loss of the loss of trust of your friend, your family, your significant other, whoever you're talking to. You just essentially betrayed them for your own benefit.
Yeah.
You have to suffer consequences. And I do believe that's really hard because it especially writing for a character in a different gender. Writing character who, because my character is a female war veteran.
Mm-hmm.
There's two female war veterans and they're both sisters.
Okay.
And they're both the protagonist in this story.
Okay.
They're both sharing the experience and they're both they both have a mission.
Mm-hmm.
And it's set in a post-apocalyptic backdrop. This is the not so distant future of America, post-America, you know. And the economic collapse that happened in America, you know? So it's about them just traveling through that. And those, whatever decisions they make affects the outcome of the third act of the story.
Yeah.
And that's the whole point. That's the whole point of it. It's like, you think they made the right decision. They actually are met with justice, not justice, but their fate in the third act. That's what they have to meet with the Grim Reaper himself in the writer's world.
Yeah.
You know. I think it's scary because it's something out of my comfort zone, but it's something I'm so fucking interested in, because It's a world that I don't necessarily understand, especially when it comes to cults and how one can be manipulative to the other.
Right.
So that's my whole thing.
I have the same exact problem about writing for the other gender.
Yeah.
I often have to like pass scripts to people being like, oh, that's so nice. I'm glad you enjoy listening. So appreciate that. Thank you. We appreciate it. But I'm just glad that, well, I have to pass. I don't even know what I'm talking about anymore.
No, you were on a roll. You were talking about you had to pass a script for writing in a different gender than you wanted. Listen to me. I'm stoned right now. I am on planet Mars.
What are you not?
And I got us back on track.
Yes. But I find that when I'm writing in someone else's tone that I'm not aware of, or
it's uncomfortable.
I have to play things and listen to them from that. So here's an example, so that it makes more sense, because I'm going into tangents. So basically, like, there's a script that I wrote about wine, and I don't know how wine connoisseurs talk, so I watched like 5 or 6 whatever documentaries were out there to be able to hear the pacing and understand
the research
of how these people react and talk to each other, you know. So I do that for people that I don't know or understand the way they talk and interact with each other. And then I guess that's the same thing with like different genders, just sit and listen to some people talk.
It's what also is great is like hearing like real, like these people like on a internet for like, because I was researching the other day, I couldn't write yesterday. So I barely could write today. So I've been doing tons of research on music in the military, like people listening to music and how music influences them in the military. And I was on a Reddit. I was on this deep Reddit forum where this guy, this war vet, he was like, oh, I listen to AC/DC. Like whenever we're on a patrol, like if I am on like night duty, like if I'm on like guard duty, like these guys will listen to like heavy metal, Metallica, Black Sabbath, like crazy hardcore bands that will just essentially keep them awake. And they do this day in and day out, and hearing these experiences and what they go through, it's like by the fourth day, fifth day, doing this, doing that, especially just the constant monotony, you have to listen to music or else you're gonna go crazy with your own thoughts if you don't have anything. And so you're subjected to whatever you have around you. So these people would like ask their wives or like, you know, get a mixtape, you know, from their significant other. We're sort of breaking up on Instagram Live. I don't know if you're getting that too.
There you go.
Yeah. No, it's okay. It's an interesting experience, researching, war veterans, and they're in a psyche that I'm not fully aware of. But I also talk to my friends who are war vets, not necessarily female, but you know, just both genders between male and female, of my friends who fought in the military and their experiences and stuff. Some better than others, of course, but they all had an interesting take on it, and the same take. And it was the moment of, I think I fucked up, when they go into boot camp. They all have that same feeling. They're like, I think I made the wrong decision here, and I think I fucked up. And usually that's always dissuade, you know, the next day, because you ultimately know you're doing the right thing. And a lot of these people, all if not all of them, know they're serving their country and they're serving a purpose.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to get into the politics of wars and stuff, that's neither here nor there. But in terms of just war veterans in particular, just participating and protecting the, preserving the law and order of America.
Yeah.
Yeah. And protecting it, you know, that is a very noble, heroic thing you can do. And, yeah. I appreciate, I'm doing my research with war veterans and stuff and talking to war veterans, have really,
that's cool.
Really given me so much respect to the military.
Have you found that, like, you were particularly drawn to this topic because that was a topic that you yourself wanted to learn more about, and therefore, like, that's why you chose to write about it? Or it just happened that you wanted to, or was it more the story that drew you to it, and then now, because of having to write the story, you retroactively are learning more about it?
Well, it was a story that I was in particularly fond of because it was the idea that one's notion can drive another person's goal. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. So basically like participating in someone like how I want to write this script and why I was so interested in the military in particular was the fact of like, well, why do these people want to fight in the military? What gives, like, what is it in their brain that is like, I need to serve, I need to protect, and I need to do this, and I need to do that? And most of it is like, well, I love my family, and I love my country, and I love my freedom. And there's nothing wrong with that either. But then there's other people who have other notions of not just going into the military, but in a specific way, they're guiding themselves and the people around them, like a cult.
Yeah.
That's why cults interested me too, because the cults are essentially the opposite of a military.
Really? I feel like they're very similar.
No, to me, they're not. They are similar in many ways. They are. And it's interesting you brought that up because I also point out similarities in act two of my script. So
I want to read your script. Just send it to me, man.
It's not ready yet, and I'm too insecure right now. And I've been emotional lately, okay? Leave me alone. God.
Okay, fine.
No, it's just me and my head, and I just need to like get all this done first, sure. And then I can, and also there's a soundtrack to this, and I need this is all an experience, Christine. So if you're gonna read the script, there's gonna be a soundtrack with it.
That's cool.
I have, and it's only independent artists, so it's not like big giant artist names. It's bands that I've listened to, independent bands that are from like the Bay Area or Austin or you know, Alabama. You know, just random punk bands. You know,
that's neat. I feel like they're. It's the only reason, like, too, like this director that's on this film. He also has a sound. That's a common thing to link, to already have music pre-picked out for whatever script you're writing for. And it makes total sense because it establishes the mood. And I started to do that too, just to try it out. Like the intro scene to En Route has Cuban influences to it.
Yeah.
So I would play some Cuban Havana music in the background while I was writing this intro party scene, Cuban party scene. Yeah. So that's cool.
It is. And I also built I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No. You're not interrupting.
Oh, I built like music playlists, like Spotify playlists for each and every character in the script.
Yeah. That's cool.
So that's how I can get into it. So if I'm writing a scene that had the antagonist, a villain in the script, and I can't talk much about it because it's a major spoiler and it's fun. It's a lot of fun. I'm really excited about it. Okay. But I had to create a playlist. And this person is only about classic rock, classic music. That rock and roll was only at that time. And it died afterwards. Whereas my two protagonists preserve the idea that rock and roll exists every day. And there's even better music today, better than back in the fucking 70s and the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah, boomer. So anyways, it's almost like it has a story in of itself, just that soundtrack alone, just battling the old versus the new.
Okay. Okay. Well, I want
it's fun. Thing. It's a lot of fun. Yeah. But it's not done yet. So
if I asked you, would you want to hand this off to somebody else to direct, or would you
I've only saw myself directing this.
And that's good. That's good to know that.
Because it's crazy saying this, but I have every single scene so far in my head already.
Yeah.
I have the beats. I have everything already there. I just now have to articulate it and write it and get it the fuck out of me.
Yeah.
So the Instagram live already ended. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, I saw it. I'm just putting it online now.
Okay, cool. Too. Yeah. I mean, we're now we've done an hour.
Okay.
So it's up to you. Do you want to, keep going?
I probably have to end it soon.
Yeah.
But we can tell people that they can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. And
yes,
on Spotify,
pretty
much on all
Stitcher,
things. Yeah,
we're on Google Play.
Just find it.
Google it, you guys. Get on Apple Podcasts.
Right now is a live recording of it, but like we play it later. It comes out later, edited and much nicer looking and stuff. But this is the part where we get to interact with our audience and like talk to people and stuff. So.
We can talk to people, we can interact, and we can get updates like a hurricane where Christine is. It is. It really is. But yeah, I'm glad you're safe. I'm glad you're good.
Thank you.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, if you got nothing else, Christine, I think we're out of time and out of a podcast.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. Thank you for tuning in on Facebook. Thank you for listening in. 17 weeks, you guys.
We're going strong.
And I remember starting this. You were like, you know, I'm not getting any work. You know, I'm just going to do whatever I'm going to do. And then you got fucking all of the jobs.
I know. And I'm just like, oh my God.
Then you're like, fuck me. Now.
Yeah. I haven't stopped working since June. No, shit. When was it? May.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, it was May because we started the pod March.
Yeah.
I did a good
solid month of it.
You did. We did four episodes, and then you're like, "Oh, I gotta go."
And
I'm like, "Oh, okay." Then I had to unfortunately drag Kelly into the show three or four times. Roxy two times. No, but they love the show. They love the podcast and we love them. So thank you, Facebook. We love you.
Yes, getrealisms.com.
Oh yeah, getrealisms.com. Get your book now. God damn it. Please.
Do it.
Subscribe to the pod and getrealisms.com. Goodbye.
Bye.